Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with New York-based jazz pianist and composer Jason Yeager. We talk quite a bit about his new 2022 project, Unstuck in Time, the Kurt Vonnegut Suite. On the occasion of the great satirist's 100th birthday, he has created a new suite of music inspired by Vonnegut's writings. It's full of 11 new compositions, vibrantly capturing the incisive wit and skewed vision of one of the 20th century's most inventive and celebrated novelists. The album will be released by Sunnyside on November 11, 2022, to coincide with Vonnegut's centennial birthday. Jason is originally from the Boston area, with 7 albums as a leader, and performed on 25 more as a side musician. Enjoy this interview.
So before we get into the Vonnegut project, which I, immediately, saw the cover, and like I had mentioned, my son was not feeling good. I've had him with me for the last couple of days, and he got in the car and took him to school. Oh, yeah. Well, it's all good. He's good. It's just the allergy thing. But your CD was playing, and I switched it over, and he was like, no, put that back on. So we've been listening to it. I kept telling him. I said, I'm gonna interview Jason here soon. And he was like, oh, cool. So it was kind of a pandemic pastime for us. He, when we were out of school, it was like he would listen to interviews and get into it. So he kind of got enraptured in that world. So
That's cool. How old is he?
Yeah, so he is. He's 17 now. He's special needs. His name is Miles, so he's, named after, Miles Davis. Yeah, so, but he's just been around the jazz his whole life. It's just been on
him.
And, sometimes when he's away at his mom's and he comes back, he's just like, I can just tell he's like, just put in jazz. Like, he just needs it.
Right. So, that's what he wants to hear. Nice.
Oxygen. So,
But
before we get into the Vonnegut project, let's talk about COVID. How did you survive that 2-year period, and how did it change the way that you approach things now that we're back and we're getting back at it?
COVID was a very harrowing time. I live in Manhattan, which was the epicenter in the United States of the early outbreak, of course. I remember I was one of the first musicians of my colleagues and friends to wear a mask on a gig. Because there were a few gigs I played right as the country and the city in particular were considering a shelter-in-place order just before that was issued in mid-March of 2020. And, it was a really scary time. There was no end in sight, gigs getting canceled left and right. I had a lot of many concerts, from low bar gigs to a concert at Carnegie Hall to a tour to a recording session, all canceled, just in those first 2 months. And that was such a bummer, but we thought, well, by summer we'll be back up and running, or well, by fall we'll be back up and running. And then, it ended up being a 2-year ordeal. And of course, I consider myself very lucky and very privileged. I didn't get the virus. My wife did at one point, but she was okay. And we were able to isolate in our 1-bedroom apartment somehow so that I didn't get it. And it was a tough time. A lot of my musician friends saw their entire livelihoods, taken out from under them and were scrambling. I'm very fortunate that I spend a lot of my time, a big portion of my work is teaching and education. And so I teach at Berklee College of Music in Boston. And while normally I live in New York City and then spend one night a week in Boston and teach for a couple of days, and do that commute during the pandemic, I was doing that virtually. We made a hard pivot to online learning and Zoom classes, and it was far from ideal, but at least students could continue their coursework. I could keep earning a living and, paying my bills. But it was really tough. Gradually, as the pandemic wore on, musicians and band leaders that I work with, other band leaders besides myself, were getting creative about doing live stream concerts and socially distanced outdoor concerts and events. And so it really was a gradual process of evolving into this new reality. And I would say now that we're more or less back to, I don't want to say normal, but because we're still in a pandemic and it's still very serious, but we're back to a place where with the vaccine and with certain measures in place, we can have concerts and live events again. Now I'm I'm back to doing my commutes between New York and Boston. I'm back to touring and playing in other cities. And I still take precautions because I have some of my own health considerations and some of my family's particular health situation that I don't want to put at undue risk. But there's a certain amount of risk, of course. The virus is still out there. But I am very grateful that we're able to congregate again and celebrate live music because I think not only did it really destroy many artists' livelihoods for a time, but it really took something spiritually from the population at large. I've noticed that even at sort of inconsequential, more under the radar restaurant and bar gates where ordinarily I might feel more like a background event or sonic wallpaper, I've noticed that since we've come back in 2021 to doing more of those live gigs, there's this greater buzz in the room and a lot of appreciation and love shown towards musicians presenting live music, because I think people realize that streaming is great and Netflix is great, but we also crave that human connection and being in the same room and sharing the air with other people. And I think Kurt Vonnegut understood that because he thought so many of society's ills could be traced to the way that we no longer lived in big extended families the way we used to in you know, let's say ancient times, or not even so ancient times, but the way that modern life tends to isolate us into small nuclear families or to be on our own. Kurt Vonnegut was always talking about the need for extended families and how we could create those where we might not have them naturally, that it was great to kind of create a web of social connections. And I think the pandemic has taught us how important that really is.
So I will let you know right now that I have been a huge fan of Kurt Vonnegut. All my friends, you know, especially in our 20s when we ran around, we were huge fans. Yeah. And I remember the morning he died, and it was like 04, 05, something like that. And I remember the radio was playing. And I remember one thing. I'll never forget this. And I just stopped my tracks. And the commentator said, you know, Vonnegut was a noted atheist, but he always said that if there was ever at all proof that there was an existence of God, it would be because of music. And I will never forget that. And
right.
I will also tell you, too, all of my friends, my 20s, we used to go and have coffee at the local Perkins. And I remember we seriously, honestly hatched a plan where we were going to find out where he lived in Cape Cod. And we had 5 questions that we were going to drive and literally go to his door. And I think it was off of another story of someone doing that, either to him or somebody else. And we were coming up with the best questions that we could ask him. And we were seriously thinking about doing that. And I don't know what happened, how it derailed. Yeah. So anyway, we have been.
Do you remember any of the questions?
So this is what I will tell you. I'm glad you asked that. I have a whole notebook of all of our musings. For some reason, I saved 3 hole punched and have it in a thing. I'm going to go through that. And if I find it, I will definitely, I'll send it your way. And I will send you a picture of how it's scrawled so that you can see. But they were really good.
A thousand miles on the 1500 miles in the car, those are going to be some well thought out questions, I would think.
They better be, or that door is going to slam hard in our face.
Yeah, you know? Right.
So, so this is quite an endeavor, and it's quite an endeavor on its own, but also with kind of, you know, getting an album out. I always think how great it is to see that all the musicians are releasing new material right now. What is the combined feeling of having this come out right now? What does it mean for you?
It means a lot. It's really gratifying. It's not, I mean, I never feel like any album I make is just another album. They're all special in different ways. And in fact, in August, a couple months ago, I released an album with my wife, Julie Bengo, a duo album, Hand in Hand. And that record is so special and personal in many ways and came directly out of our pandemic experience sheltering in place as a couple, because we would do these live streams every week. And eventually I said, wait, we kind of have a nice repertoire of arrangements. Let's record these, you know. So that was intimately connected with the pandemic. This new album, Unstuck in Time, the Kurt Vonnegut Suite, is special for a different reason, which is that it really is unstuck in time. It's actually tied to decades and generations of history because two reasons. One, I started writing the music for this suite in 2013 when a friend of mine, a wonderful saxophone player named Kyle Nasser, asked me to play on a gig of his, and he invited me to bring along an original tune. And I decided to use that as an excuse to write something new. And at the time, I was reading Slaughterhouse-Five, and I was really taken with it. And I had read some Vonnegut previously. I had read Galapagos, but I was reading Slaughterhouse-Five for the first time and very taken with this phrase, "so it goes." So it goes, meaning the sort of half cynical, half laughing, half crying shrug that Vonnegut kind of presents as a reaction to some of the horrific fallout from war and death in Slaughterhouse-Five. Whenever a character dies, he says, "So it goes." So I wrote this piece inspired by Slaughterhouse-Five and the protagonist, Billy Pilgrim. It's called Blues for Billy Pilgrim. I had no intention of writing a suite, but I kept reading Vonnegut's books because I really loved reading them. That was the reason. My dad had been a longtime fan of Kurt Vonnegut, so many of these books were on the bookshelf at home where I grew up in Framingham, Massachusetts, a little bit outside of Boston. So I got, after I read Slaughterhouse-Five, I grabbed my dad's copy of Cat's Cradle, and I loved this character, Bocanon, this mystic religious figure, and so I wrote a piece inspired by that character. And then a couple of years went by, and I had sort of a critical mass of five or six songs, and I decided to present them in a concert as a suite. And it was actually during the pandemic that I think I looked up, you know, I've been working on these tunes for, at that point, 6-7 years. And during the pandemic, I looked up, how old would Kurt Vonnegut be if he were alive? And I saw that he would turn 100 in the fall of 2022. So I thought, all right, there's my deadline. I really want to get this out. I want to finish this. It's been a big part of my life for the last now almost a decade. I would play these songs as standalone pieces on sets with my trio and my quartet. And I thought I would really love to finish this and make a complete statement. So the music's been in the works for almost a decade for me, so that in itself is something. And also, my dad was a big fan and introduced me to Kurt Vonnegut. And not only that, his father, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather were architects in Indiana in the 1940s, 50s. And they briefly merged their architectural firm with Kurt Vonnegut Sr.'s firm. This is Kurt Vonnegut, the author's father. So Kurt Vonnegut's father and my grandfather and great-grandfather merged businesses in Indiana in the 1940s, and it was called Vonnegut, Wright, and Yeager was the combined firm, and you can actually read about them on Wikipedia. So I like to think there's almost sort of this cosmic reconvergence of the Yeager and Vonnegut creative forces. And I never, of course, met Kurt Vonnegut. He passed several years before I started this project. But I like to think that he would be tickled by this idea, you know, that the families are kind of reconnecting where they had once connected in an architectural creative sense, now connecting across music and literature. And so, it's a really meaningful project on a personal level, artistic level, professional, and even a familial level.
Yeah, that is totally well-rounded. So let's say somebody walks into this album without reading Vonnegut and knowing much about it,
right,
and they listen to it. What do you hope they get out of it? What do you hope they do as a result of this?
That's a great question. Well, I hope they love the music. I hope they're just taken in by the whimsy, the humor, the colorful sounds that they hear. Purposely wrote the music and arranged it for a septet, and a couple tracks are octet featuring the leading alto saxophonist, Miguel Zenon, one of my heroes and mentors. but most of the tracks are seven pieces. I did that to achieve a variety of colors and have almost like a miniature orchestra in the room with me. So I have a woodwinds doubler. There are a pair of woodwinds player, depending on which track you're listening to. It's either Lucas Pino or Patrick Lasley. And I have two different trumpeters in the trumpet chair, Riley Mulherker and Alfonso Horn, and a great trombone player named Mike Fahey. And so those, the horns in the front give me access to sort of the traditional families of wind instruments that you'd find in a big band, but in a much more compact seven-piece setting. And so I hope that listeners will get that variety of sounds and colors and moods that can come from that. And then the music is also very, it's melodic and it's groovy, but it's also quirky and off-kilter, because I was really trying to channel with each piece, I was channeling either a character or a phrase that Vonnegut used in his books. So some of the melodic and rhythmic ideas in the compositions were derived directly from language that Vonnegut used. For example, on Kilgore's Creed, which is named for Vonnegut's alter ego, Kilgore Trout, there's a phrase that this character says in the book Timequake, which is, "You were sick, but now you're well again, and there's work to do." And the track begins with the band stating this phrase out loud, and then that kicks us into the music, and all of the music, including the meter that we're playing in and the melody, is derived from the words and the rhythm of that phrase. This is a long-winded roundabout way of addressing your question, but I hope they dig the album. I hope they get a lot out of it. And even if they don't know any of that background or any of the background around Vonnegut, I think they'll find it compelling, fresh, new and modern, but also familiar in the sense that it draws on the traditions of Thelonious Monk and Duke Ellington and Charles Mingus and Billy Strayhorn, some of my favorite large ensemble composers and pianists, and also the kind of fresh, new spontaneity of contemporary jazz.
Tell me when the release date is, any shows associated, the best way people can buy and stream the album.
Sure. The release date is November 11, 2022, and that would be Kurt Vonnegut's 100th birthday. That's also Veterans Day, or as he liked to point out, Armistice Day originally. And the best way to get the album currently, if you're hearing this before November 11th, you can pre-order it from Sunnyside Records website, in particular on their Bandcamp page. But I think you can just Google Sunnyside Records, Jason Yeager, and you'll find the album. It'll be also linked at my album. It'll be linked to my website, jasonyeager.com, jasonyeager.com. And after November 11th, it'll be on all the streaming sites, Apple Music, Tidal, Spotify, and so on. But the best way to support me and the artist performing with me is to come find us on a concert and buy a physical CD from us. The physical CD also includes all the liner notes and background on the project and how it came to be. I'll be selling those at the various gigs that we'll be doing. Sunnyside Records will also sell the physical CD. We're playing this Friday, October 28th, at ATAC Downtown Music and Arts in Framingham, Massachusetts. That's my hometown, and it's just outside of Boston. And then on Saturday, October 29th, we'll be at Blue in Portland, Maine. And because Kurt Vonnegut is a Hoosier, he's from the great state of Indiana, we're doing a little tour to Indiana in November. November 10th, we'll be at Merriman's Playhouse in South Bend, Indiana. And then on the day of the release, and I'm really, really excited about this, we're playing the music live at the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library in Indianapolis, Indiana, on November 11th. Following that, we'll be in Jasper, Indiana, at Jasper Community Arts on November 12th. Very excited for that as well. And then we've got other album release dates in New York City in December, and then in early 2023. So folks can get a fuller picture of my itinerary and those kinds of gigs on my website as well.
Beautiful, Jason. Hey, man, it's great to catch up with you. Thanks for talking about it. Again, you know, you got a huge buy-in from me and my son. So
thank you so much. I'm so glad you dig it, and I'm so glad your son does. If the youths are into it, that gives me hope. So that's great.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in New York, Boston, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Jason for opening up about this wonderful project. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.